Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and our commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, March 21st, 2014. It was a fairly good day with gold today. We're looking at gold prices up $5 at $13.35. They were much higher earlier in the day, but they settled back to $13.35. You have silver up three at 20.40. Platinum was up three at 14.39. Palladium and rhodium were on a tear today. You had palladium up 24 at 7.96, and rhodium was actually up another 20 at 11.30. So it's interesting to see rhodium move up, but of course, perhaps the mining in Russia, because a lot of palladium and rhodium come from that country. We're seeing those go to higher prices. As you know, as these sanctions are placed on one another, you could also see Russia tightening up on the supply of palladium and rhodium, therefore the higher prices in these metals. The USDX today is down 0.11 at 80.09, and crude oil was up 68.68, just under 100. The paper markets today, they were up strong this morning, up triple digits, but they turned around, didn't turn out to be so happy. It was sort of a mixed day in trading. The Dow was down 31 points at 16,299. The NASDAQ down 42 at 42.76. And the S&P, 1866, at down 5.63. So you both had the Dow and the S&P. Both of them finished up more than 1% for the week, even with today's decline. And the S&P actually hit another trading high of 1884 today. 10-year yield today down 0.02 at 2.75. And everybody can now start thinking about, isn't the NCAA beginning, Al?
I have no idea.
Either big contests or whatever it is.
I don't know. They might be, I don't know, March Madness, I suppose, is going on right now, but I haven't watched a basketball game, and I don't remember. It's been a long time. I used to follow the playoffs, professional playoffs, and I don't know, just lost my interest in it. I don't really pay much attention to sports anymore. I used to. Used to watch all the football games and watch all the basketball games, and I don't know. At my age, it's like watching children play. There was a time when these were heroes and big and powerful and the rest of that. Look at them now; they're little kids.
You don't know who's using steroids.
No, I suppose you can guess. That doesn't disturb me one way or another. I'm not overly concerned about that, but it just doesn't interest me the way it did when I was younger. You know, I didn't see the Super Bowl this year. I've seen every Super Bowl up until a couple of years ago. I've seen every one of them on TV. I haven't seen one live to actually attend one, but I've always watched Super Bowl. The last couple of years, I just, doesn't matter to me anymore. So whether the NCAA is or is not, I don't know.
Well, everybody can rest easily with their investments as the world is a happy place to live again.
Well, I guess it must be. I've got
an
article.
That's what they keep telling us.
Yeah, that's what they keep telling us. They have to tell us that. It's a little bit like, I can remember, I'm trying to think the name. They had contented cows. And they used that to advertise ice cream, I think. Maybe even milk at the grocery store. Might have been Borden's. Is Borden's still in business? Do they still exist? I haven't heard Borden's or noticed them for a long time. Maybe they're around, but don't pay attention.
That was Elsie the cow, right?
Elsie the cow, maybe. And they were baking things from contented cows. It's important that the cows be contented. It's important that you and I be contented also, Melody, and all the audience be contented, because we produce more milk for the farmer when we're contented. But when we get angry, upset, frustrated, annoyed, confused, those are the kinds of things that cut back on milk production. So they got to keep us happy because they want us to produce. What a world, huh?
What a world.
Yeah, what a world.
I really don't.
And a lot of people listen to that, and they would think, and again, they might think that analogy is too extreme, and it's, the government doesn't really think of us as cows. Yeah, they do, and I can prove it to you. You can look at Title 21, Section 321 of the United States Code, and that's general definitions. Title 21 deals with the Food and Drug Administration. You look at the definition of food. Look at the definition of drugs, look at the definition of medical devices, and they all use the phrase man or other animals, which means they didn't say man or animals, they say man or other animals. They deem us to be animals. So when I sit here and make a comparison, say, ho, 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 they're treating us as cows. Yeah, they are. That's how they really see us. It's in the law, and it's not just there, it's in other places, including Title 21, Section 321. It's not just those three definitions. We can find it in others besides that. And incidentally, they also make clear that the word human is an animal. You read the definitions, and you can find this, folks. You don't take my word for it. You can find this. You can get up on the internet, and you can go to findlaw.com, for one. And there are other sources where you can actually look up titles and sections of the United States Code, and you can read it yourself. And you can see, if you read carefully and you read closely, you'll see, yeah, the government sees us as animals, which incidentally is an act of genocide. Under the law of genocide, it's an act of genocide. Hitler, before he went after the Jews, declared them to be Untermenschen, meaning subhuman. Less than a man, less than a woman. They were effectively animals. On that basis, you can kill all the animals. Our government has reduced us by their laws to the status of animals. They've done the same thing the Nazis have done, did to the Jews.
I received a nice email this morning from one of our clients, and he sends us things for the program many, many times. And he said this morning he made an application to copyright his version of the Pledge of Allegiance. He lists Francis Bellamy as a co-writer. He wrote the original pledge. And he says Bellamy was a socialist. The original pledge was created to feed a lie into the hearts and minds of all Americans. And he says below is the original short publication, which is included for a file. Let me go on and say, since the Civil War, we, the people of these several states, have been hoodwinked into believing that we are a nation of states. Prior to the Civil War, we were known to have a constitution for the United States of America. After the Civil War, the corporate government that formed when D.C. became a corporation gave us the Constitution of the United States. The simple change of only one word misdirected we the people into a wrong mode of thinking. All this time we have been believing a lie. What we need to teach is that each of our states is a nation state. Collectively, these states, the original 13, created a federal government to serve them, not to lord over them. Our yep. states are independent and sovereign individual entities. So, this is being true. We cannot be known collectively as a nation of nation states. Therefore, our Pledge of Allegiance should read, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one union under God. And he's also omitting indivisible, because states do have the right to succeed with liberty and justice for all. And I thought that was, someone who sat down and is making an application to copyright his version of the Pledge of Allegiance, where he, instead of puts one union, not a nation of states, and omit indivisible. I wanted to share that with the listeners.
It's evidence of an awareness that's growing in this country. Not to say that it's exactly right, but perhaps it's a step up. It's certainly evidence of people that are starting to think about things and beginning to understand that there's something odd going on in this country. And what, it's like me talking about genocide. Most people say that's crazy talk. No, you read the law, you'll see. It's not just radical hyperbole. It's true.
Well, so,
and this guy stumbled into another part of the problem, and he's trying to change things with the Declaration of, with the Pledge of Allegiance. It's evidence of a mounting awareness that there's something sneaky, something tricky, something deceptive, something treasonous that's taking place in our government. And it didn't just start in the last 6 months or 6 years or whatever. This has been going on for a century or more. There's something wrong, and we are being deceived, and in that deception we are being exploited, we are being outfoxed, we're being robbed by the very people we're taught to trust.
What's interesting now is so many folks will say, what difference does it make?
Makes a lot of difference. It's the difference between whether you live as a free man and woman or whether you live as a slave or a subject. I've got an article here from the Washington Times, and it talks about Tesla, the manufacturer the electric car that most of you have heard about. And they've been spectacular. They were deemed the best car made in the United States by Motor Trend, if I recall correctly. And they're just an extraordinary vehicle. They are really spectacular. And what they do is they have a direct-to-consumer sales model. In other words, if you want a Tesla, you've got to order one. They're manufactured, I think, in Arizona, maybe New Mexico, I don't recall. They're manufactured in one of those states. And if you want to buy one, you essentially contact them, and they'll ship one out to you. But you're not going to go to a local dealer who has a lot with 50 or 500 Teslas parked out there, and you can go wander around and pick the one you want. They are essentially building them to order. That's not exactly true, but they don't have an inventory of automobiles where they can put them out on dealers' lots. So they've got a different sales model, and this has been rejected in a number of states. I think Ohio is currently, they're trying to reject the sales model.
Jersey.
Texas has rejected this sales model. That's right.
Jersey.
The model, yeah. I think there's about four states that have rejected the sales model, and the governments have rejected it and said, you can't sell Teslas in our state unless you set up a dealership.
Mm-hmm.
All right? It's got a lot. Now, what difference does it make to your state government whether Tesla sells you automobiles by means of a local dealer, or whether they sell you automobiles where the car gets shipped all the way back to Peking and then through Hong Kong and Uganda and six different other places before it's delivered to where you are? Why does this make a difference? And the answer is, it's not about, this is being presented in the article we received, Washington Times. is being preceded. It says the dealers in many states say Tesla owner Elon Musk is challenging a system that has provided needed protections for consumers in what is often one of the biggest purchases of their lives. Bunk. They make it sound as if this is mostly the dealers, local dealers, don't want to compete with Tesla. They're saying you got to have a brick-and-mortar store because Tesla is essentially, it's not entirely true, but they're essentially competing as if they were an Internet operation, and they don't have the cost of the dealers, and therefore it makes a difference. These are expensive cars in any case. I think they start out around $75,000 right now, and they go up from there. But they're making the sound as if the dealers are the ones that are behind this resistance to allowing Tesla to sell in states directly. But I don't believe that's the truth of the matter. The truth of the matter is that when you go to buy a new automobile,
taxes,
that automobile comes with a statement of origin, manufacturer's statement of origin, which most people don't understand in the least. The manufacturer's statement of origin is the MSO. That is the title, the actual title to that vehicle. You don't buy the automobile. You buy the title. The title gives you the right to drive, operate, store, whatever you want to do with it. You buy the piece of paper, and almost no one understands it. Say, oh, I'm going to get the car. I'm going to get the metal and the plastic and the rubber. No, you buy the paper, and the paper gives you the right to drive that machine. You don't buy the machine. You buy the paper. And what do you do with it? You pay an additional sum. In addition to paying for the automobile, you pay tax, title, and license, which means you pay an additional fee where you pay your particular state to take your manufacturer's statement of origin. You give it to them. Right? He said, please, I'm going to give you an extra $100. Will you please take title to this vehicle for me? And the state's, well, okay, if you'll give us an extra $100 or whatever it is, whatever the fee is on the tax, title, and license, you give what you have just tried to buy from the dealer, you give it to the state. The state winds up owning legal title to your automobile. All you get is a certificate of title. A certificate of title is not a title. It's merely a document that certifies that a title exists somewhere. A certificate of title is not a title. The result is, and this is complex and it's hard to understand for a very vast majority of people, you get equitable title to your automobile. You don't get perfect title. You only get equitable title. You have the right to operate the vehicle. You have the right to drive it and store it. You also have the right, the obligation to insure it and do a bunch of other things because all you have is equitable title, the right to use the car. Legal title remains with the state. And that's the reason they can give you a traffic ticket if you haven't fastened your seatbelt or you're driving your car without a state license. They control the vehicle because they own it. And those people who sit back and they look at this kind of information and say, oh, what difference does it make? Who cares what's going on? It makes all the difference in the world. You're going to get a traffic ticket for $200 for not fastening your seatbelt because you don't understand you're driving the state's car rather than your own. And the evidence is the license plate on the back and the registration on the front window. This is part of the trickery that's perpetrated against the American people. And people think you own things. Most of you are nothing but sharecroppers, and you don't even know it. You think you own your land. You think you own your home. You think you own your car. You're living in a system that presumes you have nothing but equitable title. And that's the best I've been able to perceive, and I've been looking at this for 20 years at least, and I'm not the only one who has that opinion. I agree that it's not, you know, it's not an opinion that everyone has, but it's not an isolated opinion. People have studied. The problem with Tesla is if they sell you the car, they're going to sell you the manufacturer's statement of origin, and sooner or later people will realize, my God, I actually own the car. I don't have to get insurance if I don't want to. I don't have to fasten the seatbelt if I don't want to. I'm only liable if I cause an accident. Government doesn't want that, and that's why Tesla's having the problem. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners, make sure they visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter, which comes out on Mondays, and we'll give you an update on the precious metals for the week and some other interesting articles along with combination of health. So make sure you sign up there. You can listen to our archives from the website, and you can also listen to the program live at 4 p.m. Eastern time, also by going to the website.
I've got an article from Guardian.
Let me just do this quick question real quick. They must have missed the beginning of the program. They see palladium is up about $20. Is this payback from Russia? And he says since they produce about 75% of it. I'm not sure they produce that much of it, but they do produce a lot of it. And we talked about it briefly in the beginning. And certainly I do see, you know, the prices in both palladium and rhodium up because of the tit-for-tat sanctions coming out, both the Russia and the U.S. So what's dangerous is when you have metals that move like this based on this, you know, geopolitical situation. You can also have massive drops very quick. We saw platinum $100 when the power outages were a problem in South Africa. But as soon as they had that fixed, of course, the supply came back online and the precious metals dropped. So it's if you want to speculate a little bit on palladium, if you think it's going to go a lot higher, but make sure you get out of it, before it drops. It's very volatile, palladium is. But I certainly do believe that is probably part of the, and I'm not so sure this is payback from Russia, but perhaps traders that are seeing the possibility of palladium prices rising.
I think there's a possibility. It's hard to know what's really moving this. And as Melody points out, every time I ask a question, is it this or that? She says, I think it's both. Well, I think it's both. How do you like that, Melody?
I think it's both also. Can't take my... No.
Yes, you can.
Copycat.
But here's the point. Here's the suspicion. Without evidence, with nothing left other than... with nothing to support my opinion other than a suspicious mind, I can't help wondering if something like the problem between Russia and the Ukraine takes place. And people in positions of power within the market realize that it's a plausible excuse for a price to rise or to fall. And if they have enough power to manipulate the market, they can make it rise. And Jim then say, oh, it's because of the Russian-Ukrainian problem. Or they can make it fall because the Russian-Ukrainian problem has been resolved. They can make it fall knowing that they're manipulating the price, knowing that some people will jump into the situation without regard to fundamentals, and then they can bring the price back to where it would be in the free market. And the people who jumped in because the price went up lose. The people who jumped in when the price went down lose because the price changes were artificial. They weren't really a function of the free market. Now, is that really happening, or is it just a suspicion in my mind? We don't know. I can't prove it for an absolute fact, but I can just say it strikes me as plausible. So there. Is this plausible, Melody, or not?
Yes.
Melody is...
Yes, boss.
Yes, boss.
Yes, boss.
All right. I got an article here from The Guardian. The Guardian is an English publication, and it's reporting on a recent report released by the Bank of England, which is their central bank in England. And the headline is, "The truth is out. Money is just an IOU, and the banks are rolling in it." Now, we've been telling you much of this for several years on this program. Understand? But here we have the Bank of England has come out and said, yeah, they're right. Now, they haven't told the truth entirely in their report, at least according to the Guardian article. I've downloaded a copy of the report. I haven't had a chance to read it. I just got it an hour or so before the program began. Haven't had a chance to read it. Catch up on it this weekend to see what it really says. It's 14 pages long. But I'm going to go through part of this article from the Guardian. And they start out with, back in the 1930s, Henry Ford is supposed to have remarked that it was a good thing that most Americans didn't know how banking really works, because if they did, there'd be a revolution. This is in quotes. There'd be a revolution before tomorrow morning. All right? This is from the 1930s, from Henry Ford. And he's saying, look, if you people really understood how banking works, you would be more than a little bit angry about it. They continue. The article continues. It says, last week, something remarkable happened. The Bank of England let the cat out of the bag in a paper called Money Creation in the Modern Economy. Now, you could get that. You could enter the words Money Creation in the Modern Economy. You could Google that, and you'll find the report, and you can read it yourself. Money Creation in the Modern Economy, co-authored by three economists from the Bank's Monetary Analysis Directorate. They stated outright that most common assumptions of how banking works are simply wrong. That is to say, most of the people listening to this program right now, you have some presumptions about how the banking system works. And the fundamental presumption is Melody deposits some money in the bank, and because the bank is holding Melody's money and paying her some interest for the privilege of holding her money, then the bank lends that money to one of you. And you pay higher interest than the bank is paying Melody, and the bank profits by the difference between the interest it pays Melody and the interest it charges you. Perhaps it pays Melody 3% for the money she's deposited, and they charge you 5% for the money you've borrowed, and therefore the bank makes a 2% profit on the deal. This is how people mostly understand banking to operate. But the article, but this report from the Bank of England said most common assumptions on how banking works are simply wrong. And they go on to say that the kind of populist, heterodox positions more ordinarily associated with groups such as Occupy Wall Street are correct. They're saying the loonies are right. You understand? Oh, the Occupy Wall Street, they're a bunch of crazy people. No, the Bank of England said, no, they got it. They understand how the system works. It's the average American who doesn't understand. And this is a report that is consistent with the previous segment where I was telling you about who owns your automobile. You don't own it. And the reason you don't is because most of you don't understand title. You don't understand the concept at all. You don't understand what perfect title is. You don't understand what equitable title is. You don't understand what legal title is. Legal title and equitable are the two components of the perfect title. You can take perfect title and divide it into legal and equitable. You create a trust relationship. If you have equitable title, you get to use property of the trust. If you have legal title, you have control over property of the trust. You don't get to use it, but you control it. People don't understand title, and therefore they are bamboozled about their cars. And people like myself sit here on radio programs and we try to explain it, and listeners sometimes say, oh, that's crazy talk. That can't possibly be. But here is an article from the Bank of England that they're talking about a similar kind of deceit and deception that's practiced against the people of the world. This isn't just a question where handful of people in the United States are ignorant. The whole world is ignorant on how this system runs. And they're beginning to admit part of it in the Bank of England. It says they're talking about people, they talk about people put their money in banks. Banks then lend that money out at interest, either to consumers. That's the way people think. And they say, true, the fractional reserve system does allow banks to lend out considerably more than they hold in reserve. But, all right, they go on to say, if savings don't suffice, private banks can seek to borrow from the central bank. Now, this is very interesting because what they're going to admit down below here, you go through this, and they say bank lending creates deposits. I'm reading from the article. Bank lending creates deposits. In normal times, the central bank does not fix the amount of money in circulation, nor is the central bank money multiplied up into more loans and deposits. No, the central bank, that's true. The money is created when you go to the bank and you borrow $250,000 to build a new home. The bank isn't going over and say, did Melody deposit $250,000 over here? Because if she did, then we can lend you that $250,000 at 5% because we're only paying Melody 3%. They don't go looking to see if Melody deposited anything. The money is created by the loan, right? They are spinning the money, the currency, actually, out of thin air. And this article is admitting it. This isn't just some radical opinion by some radio talk show host. This is from the Guardians in England, their analysis of a recent report published by the Bank of England. They go on, when the banks make loans, they create money because money is really just an IOU. We've been telling you that. We've been telling you, look, it's just a promise to pay, the currency in your wallet. It's not real money. It's only a promise to pay. Money is a payment. You're getting all of your money is nothing but a promise to pay. It's an IOU at a time when there's so many IOUs out that they can't all be paid. And sooner or later, this is going to be made apparent to everyone. Here is the Bank of England admitting, yes, they say money, and this is a lie. It's not money. Currency is really just an IOU. Money is gold and silver. It's not an IOU. If you got it in your hand, it's a payment. All right? These banks do not create money. They say that in the report, and that's one of the lies they have in the report. But they do create currency. The role of the central banks is to preside over a legal order that effectively grants banks the exclusive right to create IOUs of a certain kind, ones that the government will recognize as legal tender by its willingness to accept them in payment of taxes. The lie here, the lie is that the banks create this. The truth of the matter is when you go to the bank to borrow $250,000 to build a house, they don't lend you any of their own money. You sign a promissory note to repay $250,000 plus certain amount of interest over the course of the next 20 or 30 years. Based on that promissory note, you have promised to pay perhaps $500,000 over the course of the next 20 years for your $250,000 house. At some points back a few years ago, the interest rates were high enough where you would agree to be paying $750,000. For your $250,000 house, you'd be paying $500,000 in interest over the course of 30 years. Now, if you're borrowing that money from the bank, if the bank actually has a deposit from Melody and they are going to lending that $250,000 to you, all right, we can understand that they charge interest. But they aren't lending you Melody's money. They're not lending you any money at all. They are creating a fiction where by virtue of your signature on the note, that's what creates the alleged money that's being loaned. Which is to say, here in the report they say the banks create this, but it's not true. The banks don't create it. They just essentially certify that when you sign a document that says you're going to repay $250,000 plus interest over the course of the next 30 years, they say, yeah, I think this guy's good for it. That's all the banks are really doing. You create the money that was used to build or buy your $250,000 home. And once you begin to understand that, you might begin to ask yourself, well, what the heck? If I created the money that was used to purchase my home, why am I going to pay an extra, not only repay that money to the bank, I'm going to also go ahead and pay another $250,000, maybe $500,000 in interest over the course of the next 20 or 30 years. Why am I doing that if I created the currency myself? This is why Henry Ford back in the 1930s said it's a good thing that the American people don't understand banking, because if they did, there'd be a revolution starting tomorrow morning. And I've heard Ford's quote, I don't know, for a couple of decades, and we've understood much about what is going on in the banking system. Myself, and there's other people that are more knowledgeable than myself, but we're a small percentage of the American people. We get it. We don't necessarily have perfect knowledge, but we have good knowledge. All right? Now, here we have a document from the Bank of England that says, yeah, you lunatics are right. The whole thing is a giant. Now, they don't say it's a Ponzi scheme, but that's clearly the implication. The currency is being created out of thin air. And who's creating it? You. They want to maintain the illusion that the bank is the one that creates this currency. Because insofar as we love those little green pieces of paper, don't we, ladies and gentlemen? If we love our currency, then we will love whoever it is creates that currency. And as long as the banks can maintain the illusion that the banks create the currency, we will love our banks. But when you understand that the banks don't create it, you do with your signature, you're going to have a different opinion about those banks. Before this is done, when the idea finally percolates through, and I know it takes time to understand this and comprehend it, and it's all very fantastic, it's the sort of thing that's very hard to believe. But once you get it, you're going to sit back and realize that this world really is running according to principles that virtually none of us understand. We are being kept like cattle. Talked about it at the beginning of the program. Again, I understand people say that's a crazy analogy. No, it's not. We're being kept like cattle who have no more understanding of our banking system than cows do with a barbed wire fence around the place where they get to eat grass. They don't understand they're being kept as a resource to be used and perhaps one day harvested. I'm Alfred Addis, Karen Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here on Financial Survival with Melody Cedarstrom. And when we broke for commercial, we were talking about an article that's been released by the Bank of England, a study, a report, 14 pages long, by the Bank of England, where they admit that when you go to borrow money from the bank, they claim the banks create the money, but that's not true. It is true that the money is created. It is essentially created out of thin air, but it's created by you. When you sign your name to the note. And they have and as nutty as that may sound, they do have a sentence here that says, true fractional reserve system does allow banks to lend out considerably more than they hold in reserve. And true, if savings don't suffice, private banks can seek to borrow from the central bank. Now, later in the report, they allege that the banks, local banks, create the money that you borrow. But that's not true. If the banks could create the money that you borrow, why do they need to borrow money from the central bank? Why can't they just create more money? They borrow from the central banks when they have to, because they don't have enough people coming through the door who are qualified to allegedly borrow from the bank. If nobody's coming in the door and signing on the line and creating currency, then the bank may have to borrow currency from the central bank, the Federal Reserve. Special deal there. But the bank, if the local bank can create money, if that's the one that really created the money out of thin air, guess what? They wouldn't need to borrow it from the central bank, but they admit in this report that they do. It tells us, it verifies, implicitly at least, it verifies what I'm telling you is correct. You created the $250,000 you used to build or buy your house. You did, and you created it with nothing more than your signature and your promise to pay. That was it. Only you're promising to pay two or three times the value of the house when you created the currency that was used to buy or build it. And this, again, that's why Henry Ford was saying if people really understood, back in the 1930s, here we are 80 years later, 85 years later, and people are just beginning to say, wait a minute. You don't think that Henry knew what he was talking about, do you? Yeah, the word is beginning to seep out. All right, did you say we had a couple of questions from people or whatever, Melody?
Yes, I believe we also have a caller. We have Wayne from Texas.
All right, let's talk to Wayne. What you got for us, Wayne?
Hello, Al. You're really on a roll today.
Thank you. I guess I should say thank you. Does that mean is it a good roll or a bad roll?
Hey, I think it's a very positive. Whenever the truth gets out there, that's got to be a positive thing.
Thank you. Then you're already aware of the kind of information. You're already aware of this kind of information, Wayne. Is that true?
Well, I've been able to hang around some pretty smart people here in the Dallas area, so some of this stuff really rings a bell with me. And I kind of wanted to call and maybe add on a couple things, too. Number one is when you talk about this money creation, if people also want to check on a valuable document closer to home, there's a pretty famous affidavit floating around by a guy named Walker Todd, T-O-D-D.
Yeah. Yep.
And he was a Federal Reserve attorney that testified in a court case much along the same lines of what you're talking about. He testified against a bank in this scenario, and his basic premise was that, again, the money that created the loan came from the signature of the person applying for it and signing the note. So that's just something that gives more credibility even to what
Walker
you're saying.
Walker Todd. Well, I understand.
Yep.
And it's been building slowly, the awareness. I first heard about this probably back about 1990. This would be, what, 24 years ago when I first became aware, and it was just incomprehensible to me. There were some people who tried to explain it to me, and I didn't have it was just so strange and hard to believe that I couldn't get it at the time. But over the years, I've understood it well, you know, certainly better than the average American. And, you know, I don't have perfect knowledge, but I know this thing is a spectacular racket. It's an enormous Ponzi scheme where all we're doing is you sign your name to a piece of paper and you create some money. I sign my name and Melody signs her name. And all of a sudden we get rich, seemingly. It's because people are accepting. It's like writing an NSF check, non-sufficient funds. We're just signing our names on the checks and people are taking the checks. Oh, yeah, Al signed a check for $10,000. It must be good. And they haven't gotten around to cashing the checks, though. The checks, in a sense, are stored in our debt-based monetary system. They're stored in the national debt. No one, oh, I won't say no one, but a substantial proportion of the people who've received these checks haven't cashed them for a real payment. They've been content to just take the promise of payment. One of these days, people will want a payment rather than a promise to pay. And when they do, the whole thing goes kersplash. The whole system collapses if people want payment. Do you understand what I'm saying there, Wayne?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it definitely makes sense there. And the other point I'd like to make, Al, is you know, you were talking throughout the hour about banking and along the lines of legal title also.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would benefit a lot of the listeners to know that when they deposit money into a bank, legal title to those funds transfers to the bank, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so
I don't know that equitable title transfers to the bank because that's all the people have to begin with in the currency. The currency is loaned into circulation. And what that means, it's like me lending you a pen, Wayne. I lend you a pen, pretty fancy pen. Might have cost me $50 or $100, one of those fancy pens. And people see you using the pen, and they say, that's Wayne's pen. And you may even come to think of it as Wayne's pen. But the truth is, because I loaned it to you, didn't give it to you as a gift, didn't sell it to you, I loaned it to you, I still own the pen. You have the equitable right to use the pen because I've granted it to you, but I still have legal title to what was loaned to you. In the same sense, when the Federal Reserve loans Federal Reserve notes into circulation, and that's how they get here, they're loaned into circulation. When they loan them into circulation, who owns the little green pieces of paper in your pocket? And the answer is the Federal Reserve. They own legal title to the green pieces of paper in your pocket. You only have equitable title. You have the right to use them, but you can only use them to purchase equitable title in a house, a car, your flat screen TV. Legal title remains with the owner of the currency. And that's part of the reason why it can be seized, it can be regulated. What people don't understand about title is that all rights flow from title. If you're going to claim any right, you've got to be able to claim the title first. You say, this is my title to these rights. And if you don't have a title to mention, they're going to say, well, you're just a dummy. At most, all you've got is equitable title. All right? If you've got title, then you've got rights. If you've got legal title, you have legal rights. If you have equitable title, you only have equitable rights. Equitable rights in court are subject to the judgment and the discretion of the court, the judge. He can do anything he wants with the property if all you have is equitable title. He is guided only by his conscience. You are not protected by law. The judge may obey law. Doesn't have to ignore it, but he can. And if he doesn't like the color of your eyes and you've only got equitable title, he can say, in the name of equity, I'm going to move this title from you and I'm going to give it to your ex-wife. Or maybe somebody who's suing you. Or maybe the state, they pulled you over and they have reason to confiscate your car, the cash you were carrying in your car. If you don't have legal title, you don't have legal rights. You only have equitable rights. It took me years to understand this, and I know how hard it is for people to follow and understand. And I can spread a little seed. This is just like seeds. You plant them now, and later on, people hear you now, and they may not understand. But a year from now or 5 years from now, they'll see other information along these lines, and they'll say, hey, this is just like that guy Al was talking about back in on Financial Survival back in 2014. It lays a foundation. And if you pursue this sort of thing, you'll come to understand it, and it's vital information. Wayne, did you have something else you wanted to add?
Yeah, well, the main key point I wanted to make here, too, was, in the scenario where, people have a lot of money tied up in paper, whether it's a bank, stocks, whatever, if there's a severe banking event, again, it goes back to the fact there's a lot of counterparty risk trying to get your money back. So that brings us back to the reason why your show is so important, because people need to understand the only true asset you can have with no counterparty risk is physical precious metals your possession.
And even then, to just say physical precious metals may not be correct. If you purchase that physical precious metal with Federal Reserve notes, your claim on the title is suspect. On the other hand, if you have purchased coins that are stamped, that were made by the United States, minted in the United States Mint, I believe those coins contain both legal and equitable title. And they're a medium of exchange, where your Federal Reserve notes are only a medium of transfer because they only apply to your equitable title. And again, complex, hard to follow. I understand that, but you have to make the effort to follow. As hard as this is, if you're waiting for people to make it simple for you, the banks will make it simple for you. The politicians will make it simple for you. The government will make it simple for you. And all you have to do is agree to do whatever they say. And they will exploit you. They will harvest you ultimately like a human resource. If you don't want to be harvested, if you don't want to be treated like an animal or a subject, it's incumbent on you to make the effort to understand. You got to do your homework, because that's just the way this world works right now. If you do enough homework, go ahead, Wayne.
And speaking of certificates, I'll hang up with this, but speaking of certificates, and they mean like evidence of, in the way you've explained it, but what's the ramifications of people understanding what's really going on with a birth certificate and who has title to their child?
That's another one that we've only got about 4 minutes left on this program. And we've given folks enough of an introduction today to not run them off completely. But it is a legitimate question. There are problems here where your children are perceived to be property of the state by means of birth certificates. And it's for that reason that the Department of Child Protection Services can come in and take your children.
Bingo.
We talked about this. We got off on this a little earlier in the program. Somebody says, well, what difference does it make? Here's what difference it makes. Wait till the next time you have some children that you actually love. And somebody from the government comes in and says, we're taking those children. So you can't take those children. They're mine. No, they're not. You don't have legal title to your children. You folks are at best babysitters if you've taken a birth certificate for the kids. The state owns the kids. That's why they can do what they want. That's why they can take them. You don't have title, and you don't even understand title. Vast majority of you wonder. You're just bewildered. How can this happen? How can this happen? It can happen because we've spent our lives watching Dancing with the Stars. That's how it can happen. Instead of cracking open books that are difficult to read, hard to read, confusing, challenging. And yet, if you're willing to make that effort, you can begin to actually own your own children. You can own your car. You can own your land. You can own your home. You can remove yourself from the status of a subject and a sharecropper and restore yourself to the position of a free man living on the land who actually owns his property, owns it with perfect title, not just equitable title. Wayne, do you have anything else?
I'm just going to go get some aspirin now. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Get some for me, too. Send it down the mail. What do you think, Melody?
Oh, I think it's great, and people really do need to search, and a lot of people don't understand, and I think it was a great introduction for people. And you're right. You don't think of it when it comes to your children. I mean, that would be the last.
Think of any of it.
Yes.
But that's why it is. That's why they can give you a ticket for not having a seatbelt. Why? You're not driving your car. You're driving their car. They get to control what you do in their car. They can give you a ticket if the taillight is out. Why? Because it's their car. That's why. That's part of the deal. When they send you that certificate of title back, you have effectively agreed to play by the rules of the road, which means you're going to be responsible. Taillight goes out, you're it. If it's your car, it's your problem. Nobody can give you a ticket on your car for your taillight being out. That's your problem. If it causes an accident, you are liable for the accident. If there's no accident, there's no injured party, there's nothing. There's no reason for a ticket. This system, people who say, oh, who cares? You know, what difference does it make? It makes all the difference in the world. It makes the difference whether you are going to live as a free man or a free woman. It makes the difference of whether you are going to bring your children into a world where they have an opportunity at freedom and liberty. Or you can bring them into a world where they can just learn to be subjects and serfs and slaves and human resources.
What time lot frame did they start issuing driver's licenses? I mean, certainly when there was horse and buggies, there was no such thing. Was it after the 33?
Comes out of the New Deal. A lot of stuff comes out of the New Deal. And they originally put the licenses out, and they said, these are just certificates of what? Capacity, your ability to drive. I can't remember the proper term. And people took them because times were tough. They couldn't get jobs. And if they had a driver's license, this would certify they were competent to drive a dump truck or a delivery van. And they had a better chance of being hired during the time of unemployment. That was part of the way they got the driver's license started.
But they couldn't come up with any of this until they took us off the gold standard, they confiscated the gold in 33.
Gold and silver. They've been cooking frogs. You know, it's a little at a time, but it's time for us to start boiling their frogs. I'm Alfred Addis. We're out of time for the week. We'll be back on Monday. Melody and I hope you will tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.